You may be seated. Our last case this morning is 2018-948, the State of Ohio versus Sean Miller. You'll notice that Judge Lisa Sadler from the 10th District is substituting for Justice Stewart. Welcome, Judge. All right. Counsel.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Cuyahoga County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney Greg Ochocki, on behalf of the appellant, the State of Ohio, I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. Since the criminal rules were adopted in Ohio, this court has been trending away from scrupulous adherence to Criminal Rule 11C's provisions towards a determination of whether the defendant's rights were explained to him or her in a reasonably intelligible manner. What the state is asking this court today is to continue on that path and to hold that a reviewing court should apply a substantial compliance standard to determine whether a criminal defendant understands that they are waiving their constitutional rights when they enter a guilty plea.
Counsel, did you raise that issue below?
I did not, Your Honor. The 8th District Court of Appeals raised that issue sua sponte. They did not allow the parties an opportunity to brief the issue.
But at no time before the trial court did you suggest that it should be substantial compliance?
We did not, Your Honor.
So you used the strict compliance, is that right?
We argued the strict compliance and that under the totality of the circumstances that the plea was follow the dictates of Criminal Rule 11C.
So if we find that that issue has been forfeited, why would we address that issue if it wasn't raised below?
Well, Your Honor, there's, like I said, the 8th District raised that issue sua sponte, and the parties were not allowed an opportunity to brief that. And in their own opinion, they recognize that there's a conflict between the 7th District and the 10th District on this issue. And if this appeal is decided on the fact of the issue that it wasn't raised, that conflict is still going to be before this court. In this matter, the appellant Miller agreed to a plea guilty to the offenses of aggravated arson, and felonious assault. Prior to accepting his plea, the trial court advised Miller of the rights that he would be waiving. The court did not phrase the colloquy as a waiver, though. What the court did is the court explained to the appellant what would happen if he rejected the plea and decided to go to trial. The court did not ever use the word waiver.
Counsel, at the plea colloquy, did the trial court inquire if both sides were satisfied that the court had complied with Criminal Rule 11?
It did not, Your Honor.
All right.
Based on that colloquy, where the trial court explained what rights Mr. Miller would have had he gone to trial, the trial court was satisfied that Miller understood those rights and that Mr. Miller understood that he was waiving those rights. The appellate court, however, they indicated that Mr. Miller was informed of his constitutional rights and informed of his non-constitutional rights, but that the court never expressly stated to him that by pleading guilty, he waived those rights. In reaching that decision, the court examined cases concerning the advisement of the criminal rights, that being Venny, in particular. And it cited two cases in its opinion, one from the 7th District that stated that when you're determining whether or not the defendant understands that he is waiving his rights, you must apply a strict compliance standard. And the Ellis decision in the 10th District that indicates that the court should review it under the substantial compliance standard, looking at the totality of the circumstances. If you review the Ellis and the Strebler decisions, where they both cite Venny for opposite conclusions, but if you look at where those two cases discuss Venny, I think that the Ellis decision more closely is more consistent with the Venny decision.
Counsel, following up on Justice French's question, is the state accepting of the Judge Stewart, then Judge Stewart dissent? Would the state accept that as a ruling in this case?
Would the state accept that the trial court strictly complied?
Yeah.
We would.
Okay. So in that case, we wouldn't have to decide whether strict or substantial compliance, correct?
Correct. You would have to apply the strict compliance standard, look at Ballard, and which says to look at the totality of the circumstances. And if you agree with the dissent, you would indicate that substantial compliance, that the trial court substantially complied with Criminal Rule 11C.
Thank you.
Where is it in the record that we can glean that the trial court determined that he understood those rights?
Where in the record?
Yes.
In the, I'm sorry.
Where is it in the record? Because there was no question, do you understand these rights? And the trial court did not say in accepting the plea, I find that the defendant understands these rights. You want us to just glean it from the colloquy itself?
Well, from the totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, the trial, and the appellate court even acknowledged that common sense indicates that if you understand that you have these appellate rights, it was two sides of the same coin. If you have these rights and you're not going to exercise them if you enter into a plea. Mm-hmm. And the trial court accepted the appellant's plea. So the trial court had to have found that he knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently waived those rights. Getting back to the dichotomy, the both appellate districts looking at Venny a different way, the Seventh District says that Venny seems to indicate that the court must explain the rights and advise that by entering the plea, those rights are waived. It's not exact. The court seems to indicate. Whereas the Ellis Court, in ruling that the substantial compliance test should apply, says that reviewing the totality of the circumstances, a court must determine whether the defendant understood the consequences of the waiver. Under the totality of the circumstances, what the court must look to is determine whether the defendant understood the implications of his plea and the rights he was waiving. Here, the trial court, as Justice Stewart said in her dissent, it's two sides of a coin. The trial court explained the rights that Mr. Miller would have if he decided to reject the plea and go to trial. So he was aware of those rights. And he was aware that by entering the plea, he was waiving those rights. Second thing under the totality of the circumstance in the substantial compliance test is Mr. Miller would have to show a prejudicial effect. He would have to prove that he would not have entered into the plea, and that's there's no evidence here. Mr. Miller received a substantial break as far as potential incarceration with the plea, a substantial decrease in the amount of fines that he would be subject to under the plea. And finally, the Eighth District in this case determined that common sense would indicate that if you are entering into a plea agreement, you're waiving your rights. The Strebler case also said that it's common sense. Common sense, if you are entering into this plea agreement, you're going to waive your constitutional rights at trial. So if there are no further questions, I would just ask that this court determine that the substantial compliance standard applies, we reverse the decision of the Eighth District Court of Appeals and affirm the trial court's convictions in this matter. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Patrick Milligan, and my colleague James Coca at council table. We represent the appellee, Sean Miller. The correct standard to apply in this case in the context of compliance with a felony plea is strict compliance. The standard was established by this court's holding in State v. Benny. The court ruled, we hold that a trial court must strictly comply with Criminal Rule 11C2C and orally advise a defendant before accepting a felony plea that the plea waives the right to a jury trial, two, the right to confront one's accusers, three, the right to compulsory process to obtain witnesses, four, the right to require the state to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, and the privilege, and five, the privilege against compulsory self-incrimination. When a trial court fails to strictly comply with this duty, the defendant's plea is invalid.
Does the court have to use the word waive?
No, Your Honor.
Does it have to use a word like forfeit?
There's no magic words that are necessary.
There are no magic words. So your colleague argues it's just the other side of the coin, you know, that if it's safe to a five-year-old, if you don't stop misbehaving, you're not going to get ice cream. They understand that if they behave, they're going to get ice cream, right?
Sure.
Okay. So isn't that the argument that it was in the dissent by Judge Stewart?
Well, the argument in the dissent by Judge, now Justice Stewart, it does cite many cases from the 8th District that are from 1991 and earlier. I think there was a case from 1978, a few from the 1987, 1990, 1991. Venny changed all of that. Venny was a case that was decided in 2008.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. What's got to be said? If you don't have to use the word waiver or forfeit, what has to be said?
It would have to convey an understanding or an explanation to the defendant that would allow a reviewing court to look at this and say, yes, the defendant understood he was giving up or waiving his rights. In the transcript of this case, the only approximation of that message conveying that the defendant was giving up his rights was, quote, as good as the plea bargains might sound to people, nobody is under an obligation to accept them. You're welcome to stay with not guilty and go to trial instead. Right, Mr. Miller? That statement is made in sort of a hypothetical sense, and it doesn't directly explain to the defendant what exactly it is he is giving up. And these
Didn't the court go through each of the constitutional rights?
He did. The trial court did go through the each one of those rights, although notably did not follow this court's recommendation that was set forth in Ballard, which was to stop after each right and ask, do you understand, ask to the defendant, do you understand you're giving up that right?
That was not a holding, correct?
That was not a holding. But the court did state in Ballard, although verbatim language is not required, the Ohio Supreme Court encourages a word-for-word recitation of Criminal Rule 11C when accepting guilty pleas. In Ballard, the court explained that it is important to emphasize that the interest of finality is to be protected when accepting a guilty plea. With that interest in mind, the best method of informing a defendant of his constitutional rights is to use the language contained in Criminal Rule 11C, stopping after each right and asking the defendant whether he understands the right and knows that he is waiving it by pleading guilty.
Don't you think, Counselor, though, I'm over here, don't you think that really in this case, this defendant probably had a better understanding or than someone who just has a judge just recite that colloquy? I mean, this judge seemed to make it understandable. I mean,
no, Your Honor, I think there were some other problems with the way this plea was taken. In fact, the fact that there were all three defendants, the plea was taken at the same time may have created some confusion.
That's not the issue in front of us, though.
No, it's not in front of you, Your Honor. But there are also other issues with that language. There's nothing in the record that shows the defendant understood he was giving up the rights. He wasn't asked directly, do you understand you're foregoing these rights? Do you understand you're abandoning these rights? What the state wants this court to do is to make an assumption. And here we're dealing with the fundamental.
You're welcome to stay with not guilty and go to trial instead. And that seems pretty clear that this is an either or, right?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I think you're welcome to stay not guilty and go to trial for someone who is a layperson, who may or may not be involved in the justice system for the first time, never been to court. For us, lawyers and judges who deal with this on a daily basis, it becomes routine. For a criminal defendant in a felony case, it may be almost like a foreign language to them.
Well, counsel, I think reading the exchange, I think the court did a great job of putting it in layman's terms to this defendant. Didn't read, something overly legalese. And, do you understand that you and your lawyer get to cross-examine all witnesses, and the prosecutor brings in here to try to build a case against you? Do you understand that? Do you, Mr. Miller? I mean, he didn't miss a right, did he?
She, Your Honor, but
she, no, I'm sorry.
No, she did not miss a right.
Okay, and then it gets down to, as Justice DeWine said at the end, you can retain all this and then go to trial. Do you think that's too complicated for a defendant to understand? Here's all the things that you have to do.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I believe that the defendant in this case was never directly asked the question. And it doesn't have to use. There is no magic words. The court doesn't have to use the word waiver, but something close to approximating that should be used. Giving up, foregoing, forfeiting, abandoning. There are many synonyms that could have been used.
Counsel, what was the context of this plea colloquy? Was it on the morning of trial, or was it a plea hearing? Change of plea hearing.
It was a change of plea hearing, Your Honor.
So can't we infer from that standing there with his lawyer, he's been advised, presumably, he's about to change his plea. So he knows
Your Honor, I believe with the reason for strict compliance is because we don't want to make inferences. These are constitutional rights. It's too important to our system of justice.
And all the constitutional rights were read.
They were, correct, Your Honor. But there's a two-part component to this, which Judge Dorian of the 10th District went into great detail in her dissenting opinion in Ellis, and that the substantial compliance component applies to subsections A and B of Crim Rule 11. The strict compliance component applies to subsection C of.
Does that come anywhere from the rule?
The difference between substantial and strict compliance?
Right. I mean, that's just purely judge made.
That's right? Case law, correct, Your Honor. But Judge Dorian's dissenting opinion, it talks about the concern of applying strict compliance to the litany of rules that need to be read, but then only substantial compliance to the defendant's understanding of what he is, in fact, waiving.
Instead of worrying about that, shouldn't we just look at the text of the rule and say, was the defendant the rule says informing the defendant and determining the defendant understands by the plea that he's waiving the rights to jury trial, et cetera. I mean, isn't that the question, not anything else, whether or not that rule is complied with?
Whether Rule 11C2C is complied with?
I mean, was the defendant?
Well, I think the rule is
informed, and did the court determine the defendant understood what he was giving up by the plea?
From this record, it is unclear what in fact the defendant understood. He understood that some pleas no matter how good, you don't have to take them. That's a rather...
And he understood that he could go ahead and go to trial.
He could.
He understood that by pleading he wasn't going to trial.
I think that makes an assumption from the record that isn't there.
Do you think this defendant thought that he, even after all this, that he was going to get a trial?
We don't know what this defendant thought.
But we have to kind of use common sense and what an ordinary person would understand the situation. Do you think he understood that he was going to have a trial anyway?
I don't know from this record.
So you think he was surprised when the judge didn't, after the plea, go out and impanel a jury?
Your Honor, I don't know his mindset. The record is unclear.
But we should think that, then.
No, we should apply a standard of strict compliance so that this issue, we're not left guessing, that we know for certain.
The judge started out with, if you go to trial, you always have, and then goes through all the rights. That's a contingency. Would you agree? If you go to trial, you have all of these rights.
That is a contingency, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And clearly, the defendant was there to plead, because that's what happened, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. So the defendant knew he was not getting a trial. He knew what his rights were, because after each one of them, he said, yes, I understand. They were put in layman's terms.
Your Honor, we would be, again, making an assumption based on...
Making an assumption of what?
That he understood what he was waiving.
You don't think he understood what each one of those rights were?
He said yes to the answer to those questions.
Okay, so he understood what each one of the rights were.
Understood what the rights were. The rule mandates that the court explain to him that if he waives those rights... The rule mandates that if he waives...
That he can waive those rights and not go to trial.
The court can refuse to accept the plea.
Sure.
And the court has to inform the defendant and make a determination that the defendant understands. That by the plea, the defendant is waiving the rights, and then to jury trial, to confront witnesses against him, and all these rights that are fundamental to our system of criminal justice. There's nothing in the record to show that he had that understanding or that the court informed him that this was a waiver of those rights. And there are many different walks of life, many different types of people that go before courts throughout the state of Ohio, different levels of education, different communities, from different communities. Some are perhaps immigrants.
Had the judge said, do you understand you're waiving this right? Would that have complied?
Yes, Your Honor.
Using that same argument, some members of our society might not understand the word waiver. You agree? For instance, I used to say, do you understand you're giving up those rights?
Well, I think that may be a better practice. If the defendant doesn't understand what a waiver is, you would expect he would answer that question no, that he doesn't, what is a waiver, and he would ask either his counsel or the judge to explain what a waiver is. If he answers the question yes, you would have to assume that he understood it.
You point out here that we can't tell what he was thinking or what he understood, but the court asked him if he had any questions. So we do know that he wasn't confused and that he had no questions about what he had been told, correct?
The court did ask him that, correct. Your Honor, I am out of time. I would respectfully request that the court uphold the decision of the 8th District.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel?
Just briefly, Your Honors, the Venny case dealt with situation concerning notification of the constitutional rights. In that case, the defendant was never told that he had a right to have his guilt proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It was not a situation where we were talking about the waiver. We were talking about the actual right itself. Same thing with Ballard. Ballard was an issue of whether or not the defendant was advised of his right to a jury trial. And in Ballard, this court said that you could, from the totality of the circumstances, you could look that when the trial court advised him that he had the right to have his case, he had the right to that neither the judge nor jury could draw an inference if he decided not to testify, and that he was entitled to a fair and impartial trial, that you could glean from there that the defendant was advised he had a right to a jury trial. So the situation here is not a situation where the court missed one of those constitutional rights, and that's why we're asking for the substantial compliance test, because the court has a duty under Rule 11C2C to inform the defendant of those rights and then to determine whether the defendant understands that he's waiving those rights. And that's what the court did in this case. If there are no further questions, I would just ask that you reverse the 8th District and reinstate the convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.